Welcome to this SMR Research World Conversation. We're pleased to be chatting with Sean Bruick, who's the head of the Measurement Research Group at Facebook. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to talk with you.
Oh, it's great that you can give us some time. Now, this conversation will be the basis for an article in October 2011's Research World, which coincides with the SMR 3D three dimensions, digital dimensions sort of conference, which covers online, social media, and mobile research. So just as a background there. And you'll be speaking at the conference, Sean, as a one of the keynoters. But what we thought we'd do is have a conversation with you just to cover off Facebook as a kind of research platform and Facebook as an advertising platform. So my first question is, can you, just as a general question, can you give me, given that one of your remits, part of your domain at Facebook, is to develop research products, can you give me a rundown of the research products that you've developed and that you offer on Facebook?
I think one of the most important things we're doing sort of on the research side at Facebook is trying to rethink how we solicit information from people, ask them how they feel about things in ways that are more pleasant to participate in and actually end up giving better data back to researchers.
So can you give me an example of some of the things you think about when you're trying to achieve that?
Sure. We think that Facebook has there's a real opportunity to think about Facebook as a research platform. And there's a few sort of main reasons why we're excited about it. The first is just there's so many people on Facebook today, and it has a huge global footprint. So sort of no matter who you're interested in hearing from, there's a lot of people available. The other really interesting thing about Facebook is people log in with their real identities, they connect with their real friends, and they're sharing, you know, real information about their lives, which puts people in a very kind of honest context. You're not intercepting people out on the web where they feel anonymous and maybe very suspicious about why you're asking them questions about their use of products or how they feel about the world. So that's another really important thing. Finally, the other thing that's kind of unique about Facebook is just how engaged people are when they're on the site. So, you know, you look at the homepage and it's not a passive experience. Users are liking and commenting, you know, they're chatting with their friends. And so it's not that much of a jump for somebody to give feedback about their thoughts or how they feel about something. And consequently, the participation in research on Facebook is incredibly high, especially relative to what you'd see elsewhere on the internet.
And do you know how much higher the sort of participation rate is? I mean, versus, I don't know what it's like for a panel, a few percent. I mean, are we talking double digits, 20, 30, 40% sort of versus whatever it would be on a traditional research panel?
Sure. I mean, obviously it depends on the circumstance. But if you were to take a look, say, at the research polls product that we've talked about, just a small one or two question survey that appears on the Facebook homepage, if you were to compare that to the response rates of a typical web intercept survey that, you know, might be in a pop-up or on a website elsewhere on the internet, you know, we see response rates on Facebook that are orders of magnitude higher than what you'd see, participation in that type of survey. And the other interesting piece of it is we actually see incredibly broad participation across lots of different types of users, you know, young and old, heavy users of the site, but also users who may be on the site much less than average.
And you mentioned these online polls, and you've referred to these as kind of real-time polls. So literally, you can get very, very quick answers to a couple of questions. So rather than have a 50-minute questionnaire, what you're trying to do is to get sort of clients to just ask a couple of questions, which if you spread them across a big enough sample, you can get answers to a lot of questions very, very fast. How is that product doing? I mean, that's been around for a few months, hasn't it?
Sure. So I could let me first describe sort of what those polls look like and the thinking behind them, and then I could talk a little bit about how we use them. So, I think it's pretty obvious. Most people are not interested in taking a long survey online, right? And you can look at the participation rates and, you know, the challenges of recruiting users to take those surveys. This is a big part of what good research is figuring out how to overcome the challenges of non-response bias, right? But what we tried to do with research polls is sort of turn that problem on its head. People like answering questions on Facebook. What they don't like doing is leaving what they're doing on Facebook, going to a long survey, being bored because they have to answer a bunch of questions they're not interested in, and interrupting their experience. So what we tried to do was just embed a one or two question poll right on the Facebook homepage where users already are. They don't have to leave the page to answer the question. And what we found is people actually really enjoy providing this type of feedback, both from user experience testing and just the degree to which participation, the high degree of participation on these polls. Answering questions is actually pretty interesting. You know, giving your feedback about how you feel is actually pretty interesting. What's not so interesting is leaving what you're doing and going to take a long survey. So the idea behind the poll from a research perspective is that by lowering the demands on the respondent, by making it easier for regular people to participate in research, you actually end up with better data, right? And as I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast or reading this magazine has struggled with, the harder it is for someone to participate in the research, the higher the likelihood your sample is not going to be representative of the population that you care about. And so, again, what we sort of find is by lowering those respondent burdens, by making it easier for people to participate, the breadth of respondents and the degree to which that sample matches the overall population of interest is really greatly improved. And so, you lose some degree of, being able to ask the same person 50 questions, but you more than make up for it in sort of the quality of the data and the ease at which you can collect a lot of information very quickly. So, Facebook is blessed with the many, many users from many different countries, many different types of people, on the site at any given moment. And so what we find is when it's easy to participate in research and people are interested in answering questions, we get a lot of answers very quickly.
Sorry to interrupt, Sean. And have you done any tests to validate that theory against traditional surveys to show that you get a better quality of response?
Yes. So we've done a lot of validation work to understand sort of how the polling platform performs. Certainly we are very interested in making sure that the research that we do on Facebook is of high quality. And certainly, folks like you, advertisers, other people have certainly asked for, asked to understand what type of information is coming back from research polls. So one of the big areas that we've sought to understand, the quality of the data is benchmarking. And what we can do is ask a set of questions on Facebook and compare those responses to, a well-established methodology. So, some of the data that we've talked about previously is tracking, public approval polls. What we find is extremely high agreement between the data that we get back on Facebook about people's approval of President Obama, for example, and the data collected by polling companies like, Rasmussen and Gallup, on the order of, correlations well above 0.9. I think it's really important, and I want to make sure I jump in now. Our goal is not to become a research company. We're not looking to, replace Gallup's Obama poll or replace the economic outlook indicator. What we want to do is find ways of helping understand the world using Facebook's data.
Why wouldn't you want to replace Gallup's poll and the others? Because if you're finding a high correlation, which gives you the confidence that you're emulating, the gold standard, if you like, then why wouldn't you, as your reach and clearly given some of these quality quality benefits you offer over kind of traditional sampling?
So, I think when you look at Facebook's business, we're not designed to be a research company. I also think we believe really strongly that that the way that Facebook is going to succeed is by partnering with other companies, and that's really something when you look across the company, has been our perspective. So, you know, we don't want to be the one building out the amazing social games. We're going to, you know, we're going to partner with companies like Electronic Arts and Zynga to help them use the social graph, right, to build amazing games. We don't want to be the ones to, you know, to build a great travel website. We're going to provide, you know, Facebook Connect implementations, Facebook Connect implementations for the best travel sites out there. So, you know, we have this kind of platform perspective that you know, we can't really solve all the problems in the world. There's expertise out there that we can contribute to and help, but that we're not going to be the ones to solve everything. And we've tried to take a similar approach with research. So if you look, you know, what we are doing is partnering with research companies to try to tackle some of the big questions out there. You know, one such example that you know, a lot of people found interesting was the white paper we wrote with Nielsen around the power of social, looking at Facebook advertising that had social context on it, you know, the names of your friends who are interested in the product embedded in that ad versus standard advertising. You know, why was Nielsen a great person to partner there? You know, they really understand media planning. They really understand advertisers. That's something that you know, that is not our you know, that is not our business. Now, you know, we had some interesting data, and that through that partnership, we were able to answer a lot of questions for advertisers. Other piece of it, right? Who do advertisers want to hear from when they're trying to understand their advertising? Probably a company that they trust, who has expertise in that space. And so makes a lot of sense on all sides to you know, for us to take sort of a partnership strategy here and not just try to solve the problem ourselves.
So next question really is about user privacy and the tension there between regulators. How do you go about thinking about this potential conflict between user privacy and the demand for research? So demand, you know, so that inherent conflict. So the demand for research from research companies and other sectors to collect and analyze conversations. I mean, how do you think about it? How does Facebook think about the best sort of compromise there?
So I really don't think there should be a conflict between research and users. You know, when you look at the type of stuff we're going to do on Facebook, it's going to typically be aggregate. Certainly, you know, no PII data, no personally identifiable data. You know, pulling very much an opt-in opportunity, and it ends once a user has answered the polling question. We don't, you know, we anonymize that data, and users are not recontacted or anything like that. And here's why I don't think it's a conflict. If users don't believe in what they're doing, and if users are not happy with the research experience, then the whole thing breaks down. And we have an even heightened obligation, because users are not on the site as research participants, they're on the site as users. And so, you know, we very much believe that there shouldn't be a conflict between participation in a poll or participation in research and anything that might upset or bother a user. And you know, as I said, one of the reasons why we developed the polling tool is because users actually like answering those questions. They find that to be a positive aspect of their user experience on Facebook. And we need to, you know, I think it's really important that we as researchers look to the user experience side and really ensure that users are not having poor experiences when they participate in research, because if they are, they're not going to participate again. And that's a really bad thing.
Okay. Analytics. The background to kind of this question is really, if you look at the way Twitter's developed, and initially Twitter was a fairly basic platform, and then there were external providers that did the analytics, and we're now seeing Twitter buy in some of those kind of analytic services and building those into the platform. So to what extent is Facebook looking to do the same sort of thing, which is augment some of these analytical tools within its platform versus let other companies provide those and kind of leave them alone to do it? So I don't know whether that kind of makes sense, and whether you can respond to, you know, which of those strategies is, in terms of the analytics, is most likely to prevail.
Sure. I mean, I think it's both. You know, we have we really believe both in kind of providing an ecosystem for analytics and research companies, you know, via APIs. We have that with ads and with pages now. But, you know, and we think that's important for innovation. But I think we're also constantly working on providing good in-house research and analytics capabilities that would help inform users of our site or advertisers or page owners. And we find I think across the board, we find both can be really valuable. On the research side, for example, we've partnered with the RF, we've partnered with Nielsen and Comscore and Millward Brown. And I think in that space, you're going to see us partnering with these companies to try to bring their expertise to the way we look at research questions and the way we answer research questions. Comscore just today put out a paper on friends of fans and trying to understand the value of fans on Facebook. That was done with Comscore's panel and some technology that they developed, but we were able to kind of answer that question together. And Nielsen, we talked about the value of social white paper that they put out last year. And again, we want to encourage innovation, I think, in terms of the approach, and we want to make, in general, research better. When you partner with someone, you also have the opportunity to really learn from the expertise and the previous work from these companies. So I think it's going to be a mix.
But do you ever see yourself building in a fairly comprehensive kind of listening analytics platform that someone like one of the CPG brands will say, we don't need to buy one of these third-party social media analytics platforms, we'll just go to Facebook because they offer one free of charge, beautiful dashboard. It tells me exactly how, what's happening with my brand on Facebook, the amount of attention it's getting, it will alert me to any sort of spikes in activity, sharing stuff, it will give me word tags and all that stuff. Can you ever see yourself producing that, or would you rather leave that to third parties to develop those kind of very specific tools?
So I think we're always going to be working to kind of improve the types of data that are available and what's instrumented and all of that. But I also think that when you look at sort of the value that research companies are providing to clients, it's not just in the data collection in a lot of cases. In fact, the best research companies, it's not really the data, it's the interpretation, right? It's the analysis and putting the answers that they get in a broader context, whether that's comparative or historical or whatever. I guess the way I would see that is no matter how interesting the data that's available, for your Facebook fan page or for your advertising campaign or whatnot, research companies are going to have a big place in helping advertisers or their clients interpret those results.
Great. Okay. So let's move on now to advertising. Now, just a very general question to start off with, Sean. I mean, based on what you've learned so far, and you've got before Facebook, you were at Google doing in a marketing role, so very, some overlap with what you're doing now. And at Stanford, before then, you were building your own tools and you studied cognitive neuroscience. So you kind of understand human behavior and some of these sort of trends in the industry. So based on sort of that career and what you're doing at Facebook, what have you learned so far about the best ways for brands to connect with the consumers, both in terms of paid media and in terms of earned media?
So I think actually as you said, the kind of measurement space around advertising and earned media, paid, earned and owned media, and with so much of that moving online, is really interesting. And it's part of why I very much enjoy my work here at Facebook. And, was obviously interested in this before working at Google. I very much think the research world needs to catch up and the measurement world needs to catch up with what's going on online and determining what are the best ways of actually measuring all of this activity, whether it's online advertising or sort of the earned media that you talk about. But I also think online needs to measure itself in a way that integrates it rather than isolates it with all the other activity that marketers are interested in, right? So all their television advertising, their offline spend. I think, towards your question about sort of what is most important for advertisers, I think there's a couple of things. Absolutely, social advertising is of incredible interest to advertisers. And understanding what about social, whether it's it's, you know, ads on Facebook that incorporate social context or information about your friends' interests, or, you know, the earned media component, when you see word of mouth from friends on Facebook or elsewhere online, what that actually does to a consumer, what that actually, what information is conveyed and how it actually influences the decision-making process, whether it's, whether it's towards a purchase or just towards feelings about something else that's going around in the world. That is, I think, going to be a really important aspect of research over the next, you know, next number of years. And so, what have we learned so far about what makes advertising on Facebook powerful? That social piece seems to be a critical component of making advertising interesting to users and also making it relevant. So, you know, certainly seeing some information about your friends is always going to be more interesting than seeing just a piece of information out of context. And it's funny because when you look in the real world, right, most information coming at you has a lot of context. Has information, you know, around your friends when someone tells you a story about an experience with a product or a brand. That isn't always the case online with advertising, right? You're reading a web page, newspaper article, and bam, there's an ad there with no context. So, really, it's those keys of one, making the advertising interesting to users and providing sort of a context around interests of your friends and relevance to the person viewing the piece of content. Those things are really critical.
So I mean, they're two really big pieces. I mean, those two points are really so the research industry needs to catch up in the integration. So let's talk about the first one. Research needs to catch up. So where are we? I mean, this part of this is the issue about, it's more than just the click, it's the display, it's the social context, it's the engagement, it's all those other bits which are fairly soft and more difficult to measure. And actually, you know, research, as you say, has to catch up, because we still, in terms of the social sciences and neuroscience and understanding how people behave and how they interact and all that stuff, we're still kind of working through that, aren't we? So I'm just wondering, you know, what you think specifically, what sort of areas we ought to be are most promising based on, from your vantage point, in terms of, trying to get to the root of this, you know, to get the right metrics, if you like.
So I think it's funny because we don't, online advertising doesn't even have the basic question answered of who you're hitting with your advertising. Partially because I think online grew up as primarily a direct response business, where you didn't really care who you were hitting as long as they clicked and bought whatever you were selling on your website. We as an industry haven't provided the right metrics to help brand advertisers understand how their media is working, and even at the basic level of how many people were hit with an advertising campaign, that hasn't been answered. Cookies are not people. Browsers are not people, and impressions are not people. And so when you look at how somebody would buy media online, maybe they're going to put some money on Facebook, some money on Yahoo, some money on an ad network. To then answer the question of, well, how many people actually did you hit with your advertising? What was the frequency at which they saw the ad? What were the demographics or kind of key audience attributes of those people? Really, there isn't a solution to that. So, one of the interesting things we've been doing is working with Nielsen. I'm sure you guys have seen their online campaign ratings product that they've been working on, which is really designed to extend the same type of measurement that they've been using for the last, 50 years on television around reach and frequency online in a really standardized way. And I think that's obviously just the first step. You really want to understand, well, what's the impact of that advertising, and how do you make those campaigns kind of strong, really strong for both users, the people seeing the ads, and for advertisers, the ones who are creating the ads. But it's really hard to do all that optimization to really understand the value of the ads if you don't even understand how many people have been hit.
And whereas with Facebook, the beauty is that this is the atomic level is the person.
That is a really important aspect of Facebook, but I think the big thing I've learned over the last few years working in this space is solving something just for Facebook actually doesn't accomplish most of the goals, which is to really allow advertisers to value their investments on television and online in the same way, and to really understand where they should be placing advertising to reach the right people and to create the kind of value that they're looking to create in a positive way for users. So it's great that Facebook has logged in users. That doesn't do a lot for the overall online advertising space and kind of overall marketing objectives in general of these advertisers.
So it's a bit of a sticky problem. I mean, I read a piece from September's issue actually coming up, or by the time you hear this, sort of last month's Research World, where it was talking about IGRP. So GRPs are typically used for TV, offline TV, IGRPs for online video, and saying, although it kind of seems to be a very neat solution to allow you to integrate both of those, one of the big problems is that you then make the assumption that the two media are comparable and they're not. One's a sit back experience where there's no interaction, and one's a sit forward experience where there is interaction. So whereas GRPs are exposure driven, online it doesn't really make any sense because you've got the engagement, and just as you have with online tools such as Facebook. So I mean, it's a really messy area, isn't it?
Well, I think when you think about what you're trying to understand when you run a media campaign, everything starts with understanding who was exposed, who had the opportunity to view the ad, who actually maybe engaged with the ad, and then what impact that advertising had. I think it's critically important that we start to build equivalencies between various forms of media, online and off. And I think it's really important that we solve the basic understanding of who and how many are seeing ads in a way that's standardized across sites and, again, across different media platforms. I think the context of the ad exposure, whether someone's sitting back and watching a video, or whether they're deeply engaged with an application, or on Facebook interacting with their friends and seeing advertising that incorporates that information, all of that is going to be really important for us to understand the context, and then the way the context impacts the changes in brand equity or changes in later behavior. But I don't think those two things exist separately. I think to understand the context and understand the impact, you also have to start with a really basic set of equivalencies around how many people are actually seeing a given piece of advertising.
Great. Okay. Now Mark Zuckerberg recently announced a shift from looking at Facebook in terms of its size. You're over 750 million people worldwide now. A shift from size to engagement. Now, I'm just interested in whether that has any implications for your domain in terms of the way you're thinking about stuff, or whether it's kind of business as usual from your point of view.
Business as usual at Facebook. I'm not sure what that is. I actually think there's a lot of truth in what Mark said. One of my responsibilities is helping advertisers kind of understand how to best value the investments they make on Facebook and sort of accomplish their goals. There has been, I think, a ton of focus on building fan bases on Facebook, acquiring users who are interested in your product and connecting with them. That's really important. Obviously, brands want to make sure that they're connecting with the consumers who care about them. But if you think about what Mark said, what he basically was saying, growth is really important, users are really important, but once you have those users, what actually matters is engagement, right? What actually matters is activating those users. And when he talks about that on our site, he's talking about driving people to feel more comfortable sharing, enable them to connect with their friends in new ways. And I think brands can take a lot of inspiration from that. It what probably matters most is not how many fans you have, but how do you activate those fans? One of the interesting things, as I said, we just put out a paper today with ComScore, and what ComScore found, which I think is really interesting, is that, you know, the fan base, as big as those fan bases are, you look, you know, brands on Facebook have millions of people who have connected with them. The real opportunity lies in their friends of fans, the people who are connected with those fans. And so I think when you look at that from a brand's perspective, a big goal should be not just reaching the fan base, but how do you inspire those fans to share things about your brand, share positive experiences, share pieces of content out to their friends. And so I do think there's a lot, as I said, a lot of inspiration that can kind of come from Mark's point there.
And I mean, apart from the stuff you've been doing with Nielsen, are there any other sort of tools you're developing internally to measure engagement and how effective, you know, your social networks are for advertisers?
So, you know, we're doing a bunch of research with sort of a number of partners in this space. I think the next big steps are to really understand, as I said, sort of, you know, how do you measure reach and frequency? But then starting to get at some of those questions that we talked about, how do each of these types of interactions between brands and consumers contribute to sort of the overall objectives of brands? You know, what is it that's sort of unique about social and unique about ads on Facebook that might influence people in ways that are different than other opportunities out there?
Sure. Okay. Just finally at the end of this section, I mean, you're giving a keynote. Are there any bits other than the stuff we covered in this conversation that you'll be trying to focus on in your keynote at the SMR conference?
Sure. So, you know, I think the keynote, you know, what we really want to sort of do is take an opportunity to talk with, you know, the body of SMR, all these folks who spend every day of their lives thinking about and trying to solve kind of the key research questions that all these various constituencies have. My hope is that we'll be able to take them through some of the things we've learned, you know, looking at the Facebook population, looking at new types of research, you know, looking at all the information that's sort of available on Facebook, and inspire them to maybe think differently about how best to do research online. But also to take the opportunity to also hear how they think Facebook and sort of the, you know, the huge scale, the real identities, the really strong engagement might help them to answer some of the questions that they think are most important.
Okay, well, we'll bring that to an end now, Sean. Thank you very much for your time in answering these questions. And for anyone who's listening, if you're listening to this in advance of October 2011. Then, and you'd want to meet Sean in person and actually listen to his keynote, then go to the website, SMR website, for the SMR 3D Digital Dimensions Conference in sunny Miami. I assume it's going to be sunny. So thank you very much, Sean.
Thank you.
And thanks, everyone, for listening.